In today's episode of Dietitians Only, we're talking about alpha-gal syndrome. A red meat allergy? It's true. Food allergies are tough enough to navigate, especially when they impact diet staples. In this crash course, our expert dietitian, Sarah Glanz, will teach you the basics about how to manage alpha-gal syndrome and its nutritional implications.
You're listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast from Dietitians on Demand, created by dietitians for dietitians. Let's get into it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Dietitians Only. This is Sarah Glanz with Dietitians on Demand, and I have Lindell Schuster with me today.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey.
How's it going? I'm glad to be back.
I know. Good to have you. So today we're talking a little bit about alpha-gal syndrome, which is maybe something that's not familiar to every dietitian out there. But as we move into the warmer months, all the insects and the little buggies are coming back, including ticks. And talking about tick bites seems like a weird thing to do on a nutrition podcast. But there is actually a tick-borne illness that has a nutritional link, and that's alpha-gal syndrome. And I have kind of a funny story to tell the first time I ever encountered alpha-gal. I've been a dietitian now for almost 10 years, and I've worked in lots of different hospitals and clinical settings and stuff like that. And I've heard a lot of weird food allergies along the way. But I was on a travel assignment with Dietitians on Demand in South Carolina, and a patient told me they were allergic to red meat. And I thought, okay, sure you are. But I talked to the other two dietitians that were there, and sure enough, it's a legitimate thing. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So if anyone ever tells you that they are allergic to red meat, they are probably not crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting way to kind of kick that off as a story, because I often wonder, as a dietitian who hasn't been in a facility in quite some time, how many times you come across this. So I'm interested to hear more.
Yeah. Well, so the alpha-gal, what exactly it is, it actually is short for galactose alpha 1-3 galactose. So that's a mouthful. That's why we call it alpha-gal. But the galactose alpha 1-3 galactose is just a sugar molecule. And so this sugar molecule is found in the saliva of a particular species or breed, whatever you want to call it, of tick called the Lone Star tick. After this tick has bitten another mammal. If you're listening to this episode, how many more times do you think we're going to say tick? But so the tick bites the mammal, and then the tick bites a human. And so when that happens, the human develops an allergy to this alpha-gal sugar molecule after they've been bitten by the tick. And so every time they encounter the alpha-gal molecule thereafter, they have like a typical allergic immune response. So that's what it is. It's actually a legitimate allergic reaction or an immune response.
Wow. Wow. That's fascinating. So how does that relate to what we do? So what kind of nutritional treatment can dietitians offer patients that have this alpha-gal?
Yeah. So it's sort of a peculiar allergy. A lot of allergies have to do with the protein in the food that we're, humans are allergic to the protein. But in this case, it's actually a sugar molecule that's causing the allergic reaction. And so the treatment is actually to avoid all mammalian meats. So that is any meat that comes from a mammal. And just as a biology refresher, a mammal is an animal that has hair or fur. So that's going to include beef, pork, venison, goat, bison, lamb, and mutton. So some of those may not be common meats in your diet or in your patient's diet. But then again, you may have someone who, eats beef 6 days a week and pork on the seventh, and giving up those meats are going to be very challenging. So poultry and fish are okay. So those are not mammals. So those are okay proteins to be included in the diet. Also, beans or like a vegetarian source of protein is also okay. Some people also have to restrict the proteins, or excuse me, products that come from mammals, like milk and other dairy products like goat's milk, cow's milk. They may also have a reaction with those products too. So it's like all these foods and products that come from mammals, basically, mm-hmm. that have to be eliminated.
Wow. Wow. That sounds challenging. And the way to, like, how do you manage that?
It can be really challenging. So, like I said, especially if animal meats make up a big portion of someone's diet, in America, that is very common. But also one challenging aspect of it is that the allergic reaction that someone would have after coming into contact or consuming the alpha-gal sugar molecule, it's not instant. So a lot of food allergies, like let's say if you're allergic to, you know, soy, you consume soy and then immediately you know, your mouth breaks out or your throat is itchy, you develop a rash. It's pretty instantaneous, or it happens in a pretty quick time frame. But what's tricky about alpha-gal is the reaction can be delayed for up to 6 hours after you consume the mammalian meat or byproduct. So that can be really hard for patients or caregivers to actually figure out what's going on, because they have an allergic reaction and they're just going to think, like anyone would, that it's probably something I just ate, when in reality, it could mm-hmm. be something they ate several hours ago. Mm-hmm. So that's another challenging aspect of it. But as far as the symptoms that you, or the presentation that you would see with alpha-gal, it's going to be pretty similar to your typical allergic reaction. So like hives, swelling of the lips, the mouth, the tongue, a rash on the skin. Sometimes you'll see that. You may also have some GI symptoms like nausea, vomiting, heartburn, sometimes even diarrhea. And then in extreme cases, you may have difficulty breathing as well. So that's like the typical symptoms that you would see. And they pretty much overlap with symptoms of other allergies and other food allergies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can see where that would be confusing. So how would you distinguish what the cause actually was to exhibit those symptoms? So I guess, like, then how is it actually diagnosed as being alpha-gal?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. A lot of times patients will present with, you know, allergic type symptoms. And so you're kind of on a wild goose chase trying to find out what it is. I will say that the Lone Star ticks, which is the insect that transmits this disease, they are primarily found in the eastern part of the U.S. So like the Southeast, the Mid-Atlantic region, and then up into the Northeast as well. So that is one clue. If you live in that area, you may be a little bit more mindful that this could be a possibility, especially if, you know, it's happening during the warmer months and someone has a recent history of a tick bite, that may make you a little bit more suspicious of alpha-gal. But the actual definitive diagnostic tool is a blood test. So what they do, they will draw blood and check for antibodies to the alpha-gal molecule. And so if those are high, then the physician will go ahead and make the diagnosis of alpha-gal, and then you can go ahead with the nutrition treatment and removing the mammalian meats from the diet.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what about dietitians that may be listening that work in the food service or healthcare food service settings? What do they need to know then for those patients that come in?
Yeah. So if you're not working directly with a patient with alpha-gal, so maybe you are like the patient services manager or a food service director or something, and you may not be interacting directly with them, but you do still have to provide them with a safe meal. The first thing that you should know is that a red meat allergy is real. It's unusual, and it's not an allergy that we commonly think about, but it is legitimate. Second thing I would suggest is to check in your diet office software program to see if it maybe already has an alpha-gal food allergy built in. And so that way it would automatically take off you know, the foods that are off limits, because you also have to think about things that are made with the mammalian meat. So like a beef broth or a beef gravy, a pork gravy, even gelatin will have to be removed. If you already have the alpha-gal allergy built into your system, it's way easier just to, you know, add that to the patient profile, and then things are kind of taken care of for you. But if you don't have that luxury, A, it's probably a good idea to look into it. But B, you know, you do actually have to go through and eliminate manually all of the mammalian meats. Like we talked about, the beef, the pork. You're probably not serving bison or venison or, you know, the other options. And then I would recommend that you talk with the patient directly. So a lot of people who have food allergies, they know really well what they can and cannot tolerate. So this person may be able to tolerate cow's milk or goat's milk, but they may not. So everyone's going to be different in how strict they have to be with, you know, the diet restrictions. So that's what I would recommend doing, is just getting the patient's input, because probably they've been dealing with this for a little while now and have maybe had to learn the hard way what they can and can't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it takes a while, and I mean, could be quite overwhelming, especially at first when you're trying to navigate that. So what advice do you have for educating patients and clients who are just diagnosed with alpha-gal?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, go in and have to tell a patient that we have to take all these things out of their diet. Because like I said, for a lot of people, beef and pork are staples in their diet. And so if you have to remove that, you know, I've had patients say like, well, what's left? You know, what else can I eat? So if you can go into the patient meeting with a list of foods that they can have, then that can kind of put the, like, put it into a positive light a little bit. But the first step is, like most other food allergies, just starting with the elimination is, you know, you have to remove all that stuff from the diet just to get their symptoms under control. If they are, if, you know, if they are having like a rash or GI symptoms or whatever, the best thing to do is just go ahead with full-on elimination of all the mammalian products, and then you can start to reintroduce on a trial basis. The first thing that you might try to add back in is like cow's milk or goat's milk, or, you know, another dairy product like that, is not actual animal flesh. So that may be a better tolerated option. And then also, as the dietitian, it's our job to ensure that the diet is still nutritionally complete. And the good news is, you know, they can still consume chicken, turkey, fish, eggs. There are other protein options still out there. If beef and pork are a staple of the diet and that's the main source of protein, then you may need to get a little bit creative and help them come up with ideas or meals that they'll still meet their protein needs. Mm-hmm. And then the good news is, so this is like such a disappointing episode that you have to eliminate so many things, but the good news is there is some research that seems to suggest or believe that after a period of abstinence from these mammalian products, that patients will eventually be able to add them back to the diet. So it doesn't seem like this is forever. And hopefully it's not forever, but it's just like a temporary thing that you just have to go through, unfortunately. But speaking of patient education, we do have it's an alpha-gal infographic that is free. We're going to link it in the show notes, and it has kind of like a do's and don'ts, like do have this, don't have this. And it's a really simple guide that you can share with your patients.
Yeah, I think that would be super helpful to have. It's I feel like we know about it, but I don't know how common it is to others. So I feel like this would be a huge shock to someone who all of a sudden was diagnosed with it.
Oh, absolutely. And as far as how common it is, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but you know, I've seen it probably less than 5 times in my career. So it's fairly rare, I think. I mean, it may be more common depending on the location where you are. And if you have a lot of, you know, outdoorsy people that you work with, that may be more likely to come encounter with a tick bite. But
yeah,
it is fairly rare.
I guess that's the positive note.
Thankfully. Yeah. Yep. But yeah, that's all we have. So hopefully this episode kind of got your feet wet a little bit and gave you some good information to start you off. But thanks, Lindell, for joining me. And I'm sure we'll be back together again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah, for enlightening us today. And yeah, hopefully we're back at it very soon.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast produced by Dietitians On Demand. If you need a break today, scroll over to the review section of the podcast and leave us one. Your feedback is the best way to help the podcast grow. Dietitians On Demand employs hundreds of dietitians nationwide and elevates the profession with simple yet effective practice resources, like this podcast. Don't forget to stay connected with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. The information in this podcast is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content is for general information purposes only. You are encouraged to confirm any information obtained from or through this podcast with other sources and review all information regarding any medical condition or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of something you heard in this podcast.